Some of us have commitments. Let's go ahead and kick this thing. Thank you for recording it. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off and call this meeting to order at 6:03. We do have a quorum, correct? So we're good to go. And if Gary and Megan are able to join in, we'll stop and introduce them as well. But as far as introductions go, I see Mr. Condon, Mr. Salisbury, Mr. Jones, Kyle's iPhone, Amanda Hoyt, Bob Short, Chase Christensen, Janelle, and Karen and myself. Looks like Gary Wheeler's in the waiting room too, Chase. Admit him if you want.
Okay.
Right. Well, good evening, everybody. Let's go ahead and open this up to agenda item number two, public comment. Is there any public comment this evening? Hearing none. Okay. Item number three is the agenda approval. Did anybody have any concerns with the agenda as presented, or can we get a motion to approve it?
I'll go ahead and move to approve the agenda as presented.
Thank you, Karen. Did you say second, Gary?
I'll second it, Amanda.
Okay, perfect. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
There's Gary. I can hear you now. Motion carries. Okay, we have some meeting minutes from the 14th of December to approve. And Janelle, thanks for getting those out. They looked great. I didn't have any comment except for thank you for doing them. But did anybody see anything that stood out that needs to be amended before we approve them?
Nope. So I'm going to go ahead and move to approve the minutes from December 14th as presented.
Second.
Thank you both. Okay. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. Those still four ayes and no Megan quite yet. Okay. So let me pull up the president's message. There is a short message tonight that, and Chase, if you want to pull on the screen, you can. If not, I can just read it however we want to do it. But let me load this up. Okay, so President's message for 1/11/24. While we have much to cover this evening, I wanted to carve out a minute or two just to provide everyone with a few updates. As you're all aware, we received feedback recently from USAIS and FEMA regarding their interpretation of the expiration of our provisional levy accreditation in December of 24. In summary, as Chase discussed in the previous couple of meetings, we will be participating in activities to recertify the levy beginning with the USAIS periodic inspection, which is scheduled for February 15th. I'm sure everyone understands the significance of this inspection, and I'm sure Chase will provide greater insight later. While removing water and maintaining our critical infrastructure continues to be our top priority, especially given the recent weather systems that we've experienced and the one we're experiencing now, our team has been busy preparing and over-preparing to ensure this inspection is successful. And I'd just like to thank them for their efforts. So Chase, and you can pass this on to JR too, but thank you for your efforts. In addition to the upcoming inspection and day-to-day activities that are requiring most of our time, I wanted to acknowledge that we're still very engaged with and advancing through our long-range planning process. One such item that's taken quite a while to work through is our updated and amended O&M manual and our emergency flood response plan, both of which I'm happy to report we will be adopting this evening. As a district, we continue to evolve towards a long-term vision, emphasizing maintenance, conveyance, system improvements, and efficient operational practices. However, we also recognize the importance of the immediate challenges we're facing, and we're well prepared to meet each of them head on. So thank you, Chase, and the board, not only for your contributions towards the deliverables that we're going to be adopting this evening, but also for your commitment and to continuously improving our district. It was a busy year last year, and 2024 is shaping up to be quite exciting as well. And then finally, as just as a housekeeping item, I wanted to remind everyone that our annual member meeting will be held on Tuesday, February 13th at 5:30 p.m. in the council chambers at City Hall. I know we'll touch on this later in the meeting, but for those of you who need to leave early, I felt it would be best to communicate this early, and we'll communicate it often. Any comment, public, but board, or otherwise? Hearing none. Okay, well, let's jump in. Item six, our financial review and expenditure approvals, please.
So as you'll see this on the website, it's actually a revised transaction list. Our insurance bill came in the afternoon after all the reports were drawn. It's a pretty good sized bill, so I figured we better rerun the reports. It's almost 17,000. It's gone up quite a bit this year. And I did actually just receive a bill from Cornforth this afternoon or yesterday, and it's about $4,700. It's part of the Cadman reimbursement project, or the 408 project with Cadman, or Heidelberg now, sorry, that has a reimbursement agreement with it, which the state pool transfer requested $42,000 to cover bills as presented. And then with the $4,700 Cornforth invoice, we could pay at payroll on the 25th. Brings the total to $46,700. Does anybody have any questions?
I do not. Do we need a motion to make that transfer at this point?
Can you, my computer cut out. Can you repeat what the transfer was going to be?
$46,700. I think we just got Megan. 679.
Yes. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome. Sorry you had trouble getting in.
Hi. No, that's okay. I had the correct numbers. Just it was bizarre. Anyways, I am in.
All right. Well, we're going over the financial review and expenditures currently, and we're getting ready to make a motion to make the state pool transfer for $46,700.
I move to approve the financials as presented and the transfer of $46,700.
Anybody second?
I will.
Okay. Thank you, ladies. Okay. Motion to transfer $46,700 from the state pool account. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous and everybody's here. Right on.
I do have one note for the record. We got a 704-564-2025 at 6:06 p.m. I believe that's Debbie. Could be wrong.
Correct.
Hi, Debbie.
Hello, sorry I was late.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay, manager's report. I guess I'll just kind of hit on the big ticket items. We had a little bit of an issue with the Hovind pump last month. Some logs get stuck in the impeller. We actually had to pull the pump. Had Crow Water out there to help us with that. It was a more of a challenge getting to the pump than it was actually lifting the pump out, cleaning it. It's back online now. We did kind of some cleanup around the Evans when we had the excavator on site. I have been able to get the parts for the Evans number 4 siphon breaker. You've known I've reported in the past, there's only one company that manufactures these parts. They're all proprietary. That company is less than responsive to work with, but they have actually been able to actually make parts now and be responsive. They're supposed to be here in the next couple days. I'm actually thinking about ordering like one of each of the siphon breakers we have. So if we need to, we could like reverse engineer it, but probably can't do that just to have them on hand in case need be. With that, we've been quite, like Rob mentioned earlier, been some pretty serious storms lately. A lot of dewater, focus on dewatering operations. And kind of the pumps and water levels are all pretty standard this time of year. The Honeyman, of course, is off for the landowner's request. I guess looking forward to toe drain explorations at Cherry Pump and Olson I reported last month. We're pretty sure we found those with the radar and other works. I'm actually waiting to hear back from the Army Corps of Engineers on how they want us proceed with these. It is the middle of winter time. I don't think we want to just start going digging around. And so I'm waiting for feedback on that. And along with through levee culvert inspections that I've talked about in the past, hopefully got those on the schedule now. The Megger testing of the Evans, I'm actually only doing two of the Evans motors, the three and the four. The one and the two Evans motors were rebuilt in the last couple of years, as you recall. And then the Cherry Orchard pump motors and the North pump motors, they're scheduled for 8 a.m. in the morning. So we'll see what happens. Schools are already canceled. Everybody's running for the hills or cover right now, so we don't know how that's going to pan out. And then we're going to work on some non-mechanized tree cutting, some of the other field operations. Make sure we're out here. 408. So we're still, oh, on the personnel side, we have JR's review here scheduled in the next week and a half. And so that's about the time we did last year. So it's about right on schedule. The Heidelberg Ellis gravel mine is still in the 60% phase. We did have a meeting with them the other week. Some of the hydraulic modeling they did, I guess they're looking at remodeling it. So we kind of asked them what they want us to do with regard to our consultants reviewing it. And they kind of said, stand by for a week or two until we get the, what would be the updated 60% package. So we're kind of waiting for that at this point. As Rob touched on the accreditation, I actually got the schedule from Tarina at the Army Corps of Engineers today. Came through on for the confirming up our pump station inspections and then the levee embankment. We're actually going to do Scappoose on the 15th and Deer Island pump stations on the 15th. And then Scappoose levee embankment is in March and Deer Island levee embankment is in April. I'm sure you don't care about that, but it's just kind of, they're all tied together with that. We did receive some feedback from the city regarding the mapping. They seem to be kind of accepting of the updated mapping and kind of pushed it off onto the county to make sure their questions are answered. So now we're kind of waiting for feedback from the county. Believe. Best practices. You want to stop here and go into. As Rob mentioned, the O&M, I've completed the operation maintenance manual. I split them in part into the O&M and the flood emergency response plan, so they're both kind of readily available standalone documents. But we'll talk about those now, I guess. Do you want to do branding first or the O&Ms?
Yeah, let me just get branding out of the way real quick, because I know the O&M might take a little bit of time, if you don't mind. Does that work?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so just a quick update on branding. We did receive feedback from Dan Roca at Paulson Printing. We received a quote. I'd be happy to, I think I did just forward that quote to the board right before the meeting. So you probably have not had time to review it, but the long and the short of it is it's about $650 for them to move forward with, three different potential design options for our logo. They'll, once we settle on a design, and work with them to settle on a design and we make a decision on what our final design is going to look like, then they'll save it in multiple different file formats so that we can, they call it a vector format, which allows us to blow the image up for a signage or shrink it down to a size small enough to fit on a business card. So we'll have a lot of capability there once we commit to an actual logo design. And this quote also includes 250 business cards. I told them that I wanted to get at least Chase business cards. And so that's included in the cost. So if you get a chance, the long and the short of it is, if you get a chance, just review the quote, see if you have any questions. And then, I believe it's within Chase's capacity to move forward with that process, unless the board has any issues with that. Any comments, questions, or concerns about the community outreach and branding logo portion? Okay. Well, the O&M manual review.
Give me a minute here.
The moment we've all been waiting for, Chase.
Yeah. Okay. The only last minute changes I made was, hold on, let me get to it here.
And Chase, just as a matter of housekeeping, the draft O&M is on our website, correct?
Yes, it is.
So for those of you in the public that or that are attending on the phone that would like to look at the draft O&M that we're considering for adoption, it's on the it's posted on the website.
So the last one of the recommendations from one of the community members that commented was just having a pretty simple table of ditch level elevations and where we try to maintain them. It's just kind of a standard practice. It's kind of the normal operating procedures and the elevations seen in front of you. There is deviations from it. And I tried to put in here, like, specifically the Honeyman pump. Like, this time of year, we raise the water levels for the landowner, but to actually tie it down to a specific date would probably be more difficult. So what we decided is we'll just keep it as a baseline, and then above it, with the kind of the caveat above the table, it says common for the SDIC to work with subbasins adjacent landowners to temporarily adjust the water level for mutual benefit. So this is kind of the raising the water level in that area is between the SDIC and that landowner. It doesn't affect any other landowners. And so that way we would just, this would kind of be the baseline general across all the pumps. So we have a kind of a standard. And then once we deviate from that, we can always go back to it. And then that's where, that's kind of the standard that we can just revert to if there's any questions. Or if maybe another landowner has a question or a concern, we can just say, okay, well, you know, we can't sort it out, so we'll just go back to this level. And so that was the caveat in there. And I think probably that's the best way to approach it.
For those that may not know what Chase is saying, those interior levels for all those pump stations are exactly what we've attempted to do for many, many years, if not decades. So he's not changing anything. He's just getting it down in writing.
And is that level for the Evans? That's a suitable level for not causing damage to the pumps or cavitation or anything like that?
I think that's a really good question.
And that's kind of the gorilla in the room, if you will. You know, this is where I've kind of been running the pumps. It seems to be kind of a good line. We'll know shortly. I plan on dewatering these pumps and doing an inspection shortly. We'll know. I mean, we have two new pumps, brand new pumps and holes that, you know, started with fresh work on them. And we'll see if we're still, you know, we might have to revisit this.
Which we can do, right?
Yes, this is a living document. This isn't. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I did that changed from the original was, I'll highlight it here. I tried to give can you see the highlighted area there?
Yep.
I tried to give kind of a guidance for the Jackson Creek diversion structure and how it's designed to work. And so when I went through it, I tried to write this manual as if, you know, I get hit by a bus or don't come back tomorrow, somebody could look at this and be like, oh, well, you know, this is happening. We need to do X, Y, Z. And so that's kind of, when I read this back, I noticed there wasn't much instruction for the Jackson Creek diversion. So I added this in there.
I've had a chance to look through a lot of these changes, Chase, that, you know, as we worked through this process, and I was really happy with the final product. I think you did a really good job with really honing in on what's important and what needs to be included in the O&M and separating it from the flood emergency response plan. And very well done. And just to
writing it with clarity.
Yeah, and just to and I appreciate Gary's comment and Amanda's your question as well. I want to just elaborate just real quick, slightly, is that, and Chase mentioned it's a living document, but what we mean by that is it's in our annual calendar to review this O&M annually. I don't remember if it's August or what month it is, but we put it in there as a reminder and a placeholder to look back on this because, as everybody knows, our district is unique. And the fact of, and many for many different facets, but largely because of, the development or the agriculture or, our district changes so often and so frequently that we have to make sure that this document's flexible so that we can adapt to the changing environment that we operate within. So when Chase says it's a living document, what we're talking about is we're going to look at this at least at minimum once a year and make and update it as applicable.
Yeah, this is Debbie. That also reflects, though, that it has to be approved by the Corps. But that doesn't prohibit making changes. Just make sure you discuss it with them, too.
Understood. Thank you. Anybody have any comments or questions about the O&M manual? Anybody in the public that's had a chance to review it too, feel free to speak up. I know it hasn't been on there for very long, so if something does come up later and you have a question, by all means, reach out to Chase and we can help answer any questions anybody might have.
Make a motion to approve, I guess, at this point.
Is this something that we adopt by resolution or is a standard motion adequate, Mr. Condit?
A standard motion would be adequate.
Okay.
Move to approve our O&M manual as revised.
Second.
Second.
Okay, Megan, you can second.
All right. Well, all in favor to approve the O&M manual as amended, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, everybody.
I will save this in PDF. So it will be, and I'll post it on the website.
Right.
You do.
Did a great job with that, Chase. I know that was a monster of a document to work through.
It's huge.
Okay. Where's the other one? So the flood emergency response plan, as I did, so this front page you see here, this is, so a flood emergency response plan is a rated item by the Army Corps of Engineers. Previously, it was included in the O&M manual. This is now, like I said, a requirement by the Army Corps of Engineers in the 2019 inspection. This little front page you see right here is kind of their standard, Army Corps blotter of what the document states. These numbers here are is our system. So I tried to go through here and make it a standalone document. I kind of added the same notes of the CLW headings are the Army Corps of Engineers as-built plans and locations along the levee. So if anybody picks up this document and it says station, whatever, then they'll know where these locations are because every Army Corps engineer plan has a station number tied to a specific location. So if you have a pump station or a tow drain or a relief well, it will have a specific station number associated with it. And so as your levy continues along, it will be exactly the footage from the beginning of the levee. That's kind of how it runs. So as you start at the south end and then work your way north, it's just a rolling tally of distance. So if anybody picks up and says, oh, we need to look at relief well at 100 plus whatever, you know, you're, you know, 1,000 feet from the beginning and start there. And so I just try to put that in there. So if somebody picks this up, they can get to work. And so kind of basically went through the whole idea. This is cut and paste, from the original, pretty standard. I did change. So, and I'll show you what I'm talking about here so people can kind of understand, is the river levels and the water service resource lengths. The river gauges along the Columbia River report in their own like unique station datum. And so the Vancouver gauge reports in a station datum that's actually 2 feet lower than what our elevations of our levee are. So what I tried to do, I put some thought into this, is when someone picks up this document and they look at the station at Vancouver and it says 15 feet. Well, that's really 17 feet to us, where the way our levee system lies. And so I didn't do any adjustments. I just left it as it was. But I adjusted the action stage. So when you look at the Vancouver gauge, and I'll show you here in a second, and it's reading these elevations on its station datum, you know you need to start doing stuff. And then once you get up here higher, it gets a lot spookier. But I was going through this, I was like, oh wow, that's gonna be a bad day. And so I tried to make it without making it, trying to do adjustments with, you know, kind of on the fly. You can just look at the station, see what's happening. You know, when it says 16 feet up here is when the Jackson Creek diversion will start to stop exiting through the south tie gates. Well, per our ONM, 18 feet NGVD29 is where we action stage on the Jackson Creek diversion. But if you click on the Vancouver gauge, at 16 feet is when you need to start looking at the Jackson Creek diversion. And I'll kind of show you what I'm looking at. Does anybody want to see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Kim.
So let me stop share here real quick. So here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Portland, basically the Northwest area. Down here is the Vancouver Interstate Bridge gauge. So when you click on this gauge, come on. Seriously today? There.
.gov website.
There's a winter storm watching effect. Oh, there it goes. Okay, so this gauge right here, you can see it. So it's at 7.94 and it's going to be up here at 8. It gives you, if you click on it, it gives you kind of the time. You can see in here there's still a lot of tidal signal this time of year. But if you come down here, there's an adjustment. So this stage, and it's station datum, flood stage 16 feet, but NGVD29 is 1.82. So it's almost a 2 foot deviation from what the gauge is reading to what all of our stuff was built in. And so I just left it as you look at the gauge and then make your decisions accordingly. So you're not trying to sit there and make adjustments as you go. So to give you another example, St. Helens, which is just as slow, imagine the weather service pages right now are a pretty hot ticket item. So this one, see how it's reading almost the same? It's downstream though, so it's lower. So the adjustment here is 0.9 feet. So does that kind of make sense why I just left it the way it was and not try to adjust it?
That's easier to follow that way.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hoping, is it just you look at the gauge and then you make your decisions. So, and with that, I guess any other questions?
This is another annually renewable deal that's part of our O&M review, correct? Just because, especially with all the names and phone numbers, as those change.
Well, and that's the thing too, is we should probably do an annual review, but this could also be, so the O&M is to be reviewed in March, I believe. We should probably review this in December before flood season. Maybe December, February, November, December.
Okay.
So to make sure it's up to date going into flood season.
Okay.
Chase, where it says number 14, known trouble locations, and it's left blank, is that just something we'll learn by experience?
Correct.
Or do we already know of some trouble locations? There was a trouble location in 1996, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, and that was the thing. So it's kind of in 96. Because back in 96, I remember being here for it, and it was like we had a lot of seepage through the levees, and at that time everybody just panicked. But it's, the seepage is normal. And yeah. So it's kind of, if it's turbid, definitely, because now you're having some hydraulic excavation taking place. But if it's clear water, which we had a lot of down at Deer Island, is you just kind of leave it be. And so it's because they're designed to seep, I guess. If there was any boils or turbid boils, I'm not aware of. I'm sure maybe somebody had some. But were they in the levee? Were they 500 yards inland?
It was seepage through the dike. It was clear water at the Chapman Landing area, and then also near Brown's Landing, just downstream from the corner there where you go over the dike.
Yeah.
Both were clear.
Yeah, and so those ones that really pose as a trouble location, that would be standard
hydrology. Is there something you had in mind when you said there was an area?
Me?
Yes.
Oh yeah, we had a low spot that had to be filled in.
But on your property specifically, or
no, on the levee.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But that's fixed now, so.
Correct.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to get my head around what a trouble location might be.
It in there.
Okay.
Just because maybe if we do have a high water event and it's, there's a boil that develops here at, so to kind of give you an example, the sub levee is entirely designed around a trouble location. It was shown to have horrible seepage back prior to 1960s, I believe. But it now has a sub levee around it, and it has an operational plan for it. I do call it out in here to make sure to monitor it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at some point you got to close the sub levee sluice gates to let the sub levee structure operate as designed.
I guess I just want to make sure, because the item number says known trouble locations, and it says left blank to be added as later needed. But does that mean we don't know of any currently? Is that what that?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And that would be something that would be triggered from a periodic inspection, I would think, too, right, Chase? I mean, if they went through and they found, you know, troubled areas, we could update this as necessary.
Yeah, and I mean, even a periodic inspection is not going to show these. These are only going to manifest themselves, you know, in the most extreme events. And it could be that, you know, you end up with a trouble location. Like, let's say you end up with a sand boil that's hydraulically excavating, and you had to ring it, let's say. So you come back to this, you say, okay, there's a sand boil here. Maybe we haven't permanently fixed it yet or found a solution. And we end up with like a 96, 97 event where the very next year it comes up again and we haven't been able to repair an engineered solution. And so, you know, it's there, something to watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
But none at this time. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Thank you.
And under the one of the ticket items to the evacuation plan is, I mean, we don't really have any jurisdictional authority to force anybody to evacuate. This is all going to be handled by the Columbia County Sheriff's Office. And so basically all we can do is work with them, provide them the best information.
Again, I sound like a broken record, but this was really well done too. Very easy to follow.
And do all of these contacts receive they are all informed about this. Do they receive a copy of it?
I don't know if they receive a copy of it. This is more of an internal document.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't really force anybody to do anything. We don't have that type of authority. The only thing we can do is we can just tell them. And if you're not aware of floods going on, it's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any comment, public comment or otherwise, about the flood emergency response plan?
Other than it gives me the heebie-jeebies?
Yeah. All right. I'm hearing none. Do we need a motion then, Mr. Chase, to approve this? This is amended also, right? Or is this adopted? It's kind of amending the adopted or adopting the amended.
I'll move to approve the SDIC flood emergency response plan as revised.
I can.
Perfect. Okay. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. I heard five ayes. Motion carries. Well, now what are you going to do with all your spare time, Chase?
Yeah.
Those are done.
Periodic inspection.
Storm coming
through. Yeah, periodic inspection and a storm.
Well, that.
All right.
I really don't have anything stormwater rental. The only thing there was a little, I guess the renter wants to get her own mailbox. Basically said it's okay. It's up to her. Went through the property manager. She can make her own mailbox. Coordinate with the postal service. Most likely it'd have the B annotation. So. Legal, I'm not aware of any. Jeff, have anything to add?
No, it's been blissfully quiet.
It's kind of back to the manager's report. Like I said here, action items for me. Annual meeting prep. I did hear back from Lori. She is busy for the annual meeting. So I just wanted to put that out there. And we can discuss that later. I guess let's go into COLA.
Now, remind me, and Mr. Condit and Ms. Kessie, I'm pretty sure that you both helped me out with this last year, but do we don't need any type of discussion around what the current pay rates are for our employees are? Do we just discuss what the COLA percentage is and agree upon it? Or do you guys want some more detail as to how we came up with it?
How we came up with the COLA.
Yeah. So we can kind of walk through it real quick just to give everybody a reminder. But per, you know, per our, what's the name of that for the formal name for our plan? Our salary and
compensation.
Yeah.
Review plan.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So per our compensation plan, one of the things that we've adopted was as a continuous improvement for our employees' salaries is to, review the cost of living index or the cost of living adjustment based on the Western consumer price index for the Western region. That's what Chase has on the screen now. And basically the way we do it is we look at a previous 12 months and we take an average and we adopt that number as the cost of living adjustment for the preceding year. So for 2024. So if you take January through December's numbers, you should come up with 4.32%. And that would be the annual COLA for our general manager and our field operations technician. We already talked about the step in the December meeting. So unless somebody wants to discuss that, we can probably skip right over it. And just make sure everybody knows that the COLA this year is 4.32%, and it will go into effect immediately. As of January 1st, I believe, right, Chase?
I would have to double check that.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it's January
1st. Retro to January 1st?
I think so.
Okay.
Do we need to approve this by motion? Seems like it.
Yeah. Yes, you should. Mm-hmm.
So I move to approve a COLA adjustment of 4.32%.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor for approving the 2024 COLA for 4.32%? Say aye.
I actually do have a discussion. So does that have to, should we put the year? I just amend that motion to be for 2024.
Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Is that okay with the second?
Yes. Is that 20? Yeah, I guess it would be 2024 because it's going forward. It's 2023 as far as what we based it on, but it's 2024. So I get it.
Okay.
Is that correct? Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you both for the discussion. Okay. So we have a motion on the table. It's to approve the cost of living adjustment at 4.32% for 2024. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
I think I heard everybody. Did I miss anybody, Karen?
I don't know if I heard Gary.
I did say aye, but I'll say okay. It again if you need it.
Great. Thank you. Sometimes we all talk at once.
All right. Motion carries. And I will update our rate spreadsheet and put it onto SharePoint so that the board can look at it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Rob, for getting that organized for us.
Of course. Thanks for checking my math, Chase, to make sure I was right.
Yeah, math is hard.
Okay. So item number 8, upcoming meetings. We have our annual member meeting on February 13th, 2024. And keep in mind, and please keep an eye out, I should say, for the mailer that'll be coming. It will say 5:30 p.m. start time, I believe, and Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we typically start those at 6, or historically have started them at 6.
I believe it has been 6 in the past.
I think so too. So there's a little change there. We're trying to get an early start on it. So 5:30 p.m. February 13th, same place, council chambers, at Scappoose City Hall. And that'll be followed immediately after by our board of directors meeting. Typically that takes place around 7 or so. So immediately preceding the annual members meeting will be the board of directors meeting. Any comment, question, or concern about the dates or times of that?
Mr. Chair, this is Jeff. I was just wondering if that means that the regular meeting on February 8th is going to be canceled in lieu of, because you're going to be having the annual meeting on 13th.
Yes, sir.
And did you determine for sure that you're able to make it, Mr. Condit?
Yes.
Okay, great.
And because the 8th hadn't been noticed yet, we probably don't need any type of motion to cancel it, right, Jeff? It just kind of goes away from our every second Thursday, but it hasn't been noticed or scheduled yet.
Right. I mean, you
we approved it.
You have an adopted regular meeting date. If you do have an adopted regular meeting time, then you probably should cancel that meeting in favor of the meeting on move to cancel that meeting in favor of the meeting on 13th.
Okay. Yeah, and we had, like Chase said too, I think we approved that date and time at the last meeting, and
so right, that's right. You've already done it.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Action items and master calendar. My phone beeped, so the state pool transfer must be complete. But if not, I'd be shocked. We need to do the state pool transfer of 46,700.
It's done.
Okay. I already checked the box. Speedy. We can go ahead and move now, Chase, to change the draft O&M and the draft FERP on our website to adopted or final or whatever, whatever we'd like to coin it, but maybe take it out of draft form.
Yeah, so I'm going to take it out of draft form, put it into adopted form as a PDF, and it will probably go under maybe resources.
Beautiful. Okay, Rob needs to put the pay rate sheet and tracking mechanism on the SharePoint, which will be done shortly, so everybody can look at that. Did I miss any action items?
Oh, I need to add the flood emergency response plan to the annual calendar for review. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
November or December? What do you guys want?
When do we do
whatever looks best to you?
I'm just saying to update it before flood season.
How is November? We only have.
December is kind of all about the GM, so maybe maybe November. Perfect.
Kind of skipped over, we don't have another meeting, I guess, until our annual meeting, but we kind of skipped over the fact that Lori Mapes would not be able to help. I assume that Janelle might be present, and my question is she comfortable taking care of whatever needs to be done, or do we need to find somebody else to work with her in that task?
So Janelle will be taking the minutes, and that took over a lot of what Lori used to do. She was just going to help me with establishing a quorum and counting votes if need be.
We're pretty well covered on that, as I would understand.
I mean, maybe if we could have a board member help me out for the couple minutes it takes to do that when the very beginning of the meeting. It's basically, it's just taking proxies, certificates of authority. And what I'll probably do this year, a lot of the larger landowners reach out to me usually prior to the meeting. And so those are usually, I'd say a majority of them are completed for the actual annual meeting. So it's basically just catching up the people that walk in that day. So if Amanda could help me, that'd be great.
Yeah, I can do that. I think, do we have anything to vote on at the meeting besides
you?
Yeah, I was going to say, unless there's anybody else that wants to run.
Amanda can help you with the quorum, and I can help with the vote if we need. Don't we have to do a secret ballot?
It all depends how it unfolds. There's only one person.
If there's only one person running, then you don't. But I can help with that part if need be.
Yeah, if it's a contested vote, then that's maybe another board member or Karen would be great. All it is counting up votes.
Yeah. So. I can count. I can do that.
Well, thanks, guys, for jumping in and volunteering to help. Appreciate that. Tell Lori we gave her this year off, but next year we're going to need her.
Yeah. And the other thing too, kind of as a housekeeping item, I went back and I looked at the back and forth between us and Metro Presort, who does our mass mailer. And we had the annual report to landowners, which is required to be distributed with the notice. That time it was the 24th, given the week, I think we probably need to be closer to the 22nd or the 23rd of January. And then by the time we get it to them, they send us back proofs a couple days later. We read the proofs and edit them. Usually takes a day or two, and then it goes out to mailing. And by our bylaws, we have to have the annual member meeting out 7 days ahead of time. Or it has to be there 7 days ahead of time, which is 2 to 3 days standard mail. So that kind of gives everybody a time frame. If you want to add something to the annual report, probably have it in by the 22nd. Does that make sense? Kind of what I'm saying? Okay.
Makes Rob, sense did you? Rob, I think I already gave you something for that, didn't I?
Yes, you did. And if any other board member wants to email me privately, or shoot me a text about something they'd like to see in the annual report, I'll do my best to make sure all that's included.
Were okay. Maybe shoot out a copy of that so that we're not guessing at what you might already have in there.
Yes, absolutely. That's and well before the 20th. I won't wait till the 19th at midnight. Okay. Is that all of it, Chase? I didn't see anything else at the bottom of our agenda.
Sorry.
Well covered. Item number 10 is to adjourn the meeting. I've got a 10-year-old birthday girl waiting on dad to take her to dinner. So I'm going to adjourn this thing now and hit the road.
Hey.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Yeah,
thank you. Have a good dinner.